Hello, and welcome to Total EM. This is podcast number 10. We have finally hit the double digits. We have another great guest. We just had a whole series of interviews, and we wanted to make sure to share them. Our most recent one is Dr. Jeff Jarvis. You may have heard of him before. Min LeKong had him on his show regarding VL only in an EMS situation. He is really big on that, and after I found out about Dr. Jeff Jarvis, I actually contacted him directly and asked him if he wanted to be on the show, and fortunately enough, he said yes. This is going to be a two-part podcast. The first half, which is what you're listening to now, is going to be shorter than the second half. That's mainly because of the best way to break up the material so that it would be more easy to digest was to split it at where we ended it. This podcast not only acts as an introduction to Dr. Jeff Jarvis, but also of his system with using VL only. There is one caveat, in case Min's listening right now even, and it's an interesting situation and why he has it on there. But pretty much they do not use DL, and it sounds like it's been very, very successful for them. So I wanted to have him on the show so he could talk about it a little bit. Our second half is more of a talk about the device, why he picked that one, the applications for it, and just some really good tips in airway management in general. So I highly encourage you not only to listen to this episode and see why he's doing it and some special caveats to it, but you'll even learn more caveats and better understand how to manage an airway in some unique situations in the second half. That will be out next week. So I really encourage you to pay attention to not only this one, but make sure you come back in a week, re-listen to this, and what the heck, why not re-listen to this while we're at it? As you notice, we're going to be doing a lot of airway recently. We had Jim DeCanto on the past couple weeks, and we have a special surprise for you all as well. We're actually going to interview Dr. Nicholas Crimes of the Vortex Approach, and he's coming up as well. So just keep that in mind. I want you all to stay focused and keep coming back. We're going to constantly have more content. We may slip in some other material. It just depends. We do want to keep this rolling at least once a week, but who knows? Maybe I'll get bored and I'll want to throw some other stuff in there. With that being said, why don't we just go ahead and get started with the podcast? Dr. Jeff Jarvis is the EMS Medical Director for Williamson County EMS and Marble Falls Area EMS. He maintains a clinical practice in the ED at Baylor Scott and White in Round Rock, Texas. He is board certified in emergency medicine and EMS. He began his career in EMS over 30 years ago and remains a licensed paramedic today. Dr. Jarvis has research interests in airway management and clinical performance measures. He is a proud father of two wonderful kids, husband of 26 years, and a loyal Aggie. So first thing I wanted to ask you about on this is for our international listeners or people who just aren't familiar with Texas, I guess, what's an Aggie?
So an Aggie is an alumnus or a student of Texas A&M University, which, in case anyone is wondering, that is the best university in the state of Texas.
Ooh, I feel like we're throwing something down here. So if I talk to another Texan, I got to watch myself now. Okay, well, I guess since you're first up, you get to make that claim until someone else comes later.
Exactly. And if you speak to anyone else from Texas, they may have some differing opinions, but I'm just going to go ahead and clarify this. They're wrong and I'm right.
All right. I like that answer. So I wanted to talk to you because I've been kind of stealing some stuff from Min as I've been going through, and he suggested I talk to you because, as we've talked about in our emails, we both like VL, video laryngoscopy,
yeah.
And it's got some real benefits to it. I mean, no system I think is perfect yet, whether you talk about DL or VL, but we're getting there. And I feel like you've really gone the distance. You've gone further than anyone else I know. I know some places they're working with VL pre-hospitally or in the hospital, but no one said, you know what, we're ditching everything. We're going to VL only. We're not going to have any of this DL equipment on our trucks. This was huge. So when I saw this and I listened to Min's podcast, I thought, this is someone I need to talk to. This is someone who obviously believes in the VL concept, and for very good reason. You have a very interesting system and why you did that. So if you don't mind, can you talk a little bit about that first?
Yeah, absolutely. So this one of the other interests I have is performance measures. So when I took over the system as medical director, I started looking at different performance measures to see where we were. And one of the things that I'm a very big believer in aggressively and appropriately controlling the airway. But I also believe if we're going to do it, we need to do it right. As you know, intubation is a place, particularly when you're using medication-facilitated intubation, whether it's RSI or what we're using now is DSI, you have the ability to really mess the procedure up and hurt people. So I wanted to make sure that if we were doing it, we were going to do it right. So I started a study and I took a look and I said, well, what is our first pass intubation success rate? And it turns out it was pretty abysmal. It was under 50%. It was like 49% first pass success rate with an overall success rate somewhere around 73%. And obviously I was not very happy with that. I took a look at some of the problems we were facing. The biggest problems were we didn't have very good definitions. So I really had to go back and define our terms pretty well. And we now do a hard and fast definition anytime a blade passes the teeth. And we use a King Vision, so the ET tube is actually attached to the blade now. Anytime the blade passes the teeth with that tube involved, whether you try to pass the tube or don't and just come out, that's an attempt. So we had to define that in a hard and fast way and then recollect the data. And it turns out that the data was just as bad. So then we looked at different ways. Can we resolve this problem with additional training? Is there something else we can do? Now, at the same time, in my own practice, I noticed that I had switched almost entirely to video laryngoscopy. So a little background about myself. I started my career off in 1988 as a paramedic. And then started medical school in 2001 and started practicing as a resident in 2005. When I hit my emergency medicine residency, my faculty quickly figured out I was pretty adept at using a direct laryngoscope. And we had this, for us, new toy in the department, a GlideScope. And they decided that I needed to do all of my intubations with a GlideScope. Turns out I was horrible at it. I kept missing and kept missing and kept missing and kept going to my backup device, which was DL. And I was usually successful with that. Unfortunately, because it was so new to us, no one in my program at the time really focused on how using a GlideScope was different than using DL. So I had to get out into practice and have actually the GlideScope rep who was coming by with a new toy for us. He came by and said, well, what do you think about the GlideScope? And in my typical fashion, I said, well, it sucks. It's horrible. You know, I don't know what all these people are talking about. This is a terrible device. Just you'll get my laryngoscope, my direct laryngoscope, when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. Much like a lot of people's responses are when you talk to them now. The rep quickly figured out the way to deal with me is beat me over the head with a 2x4. And he did that and said, well, the reason you're not successful is you're not doing it right. And I said, well, all right, smartass, show me how to do it. And he did. And I went, oh, you mean like I'm not doing it right? So once I learned how to do it, I became a huge fan and just stopped using DL at all. And it wasn't really a conscious decision. It's every intubation that came in, I said, you know, I really like this VL. I'm just going to use that. And DL was always there as a backup for me. It's just that I never used it. That was kind of my personal transformation over to a VL advocate. And that happened probably 2 years before I took over the EMS system. So I had video laryngoscopy. I was already a convert and had it in the back of my head as this is going to be a likely solution. So because of that, I said, well, let's give it a try. And we went through some very, very brief cadaver trials with different devices and focused in on the King Vision and put it out. We did some initial training and we looked at our success rates. So the success rates were much better. I said, I think we found our solution. So then we just went all in on the video laryngoscopy. So that's kind of how we initially made the decision to add VL. At the time, I really didn't have any thoughts about removing DL or making it taking it away as an option. Where that came from is just our continued performance measures. We continued to look at our performance with this. And what we saw is after we trained the system in the King Vision, we saw a huge spike in our success rates. And I said, this is great. It must be the tool. you know, I'm just going to, this is a can't miss tool. I'm just going to leave it alone. And as soon as I did that, I saw our success rates drop off pretty dramatically, which was really the first lesson to me about this is it's not so much the tool as it is the training that goes along with it. I just happened to think that the combination of the training and this tool make it particularly good for novice intubators, for people who don't intubate every day. So as we really went in and committed to training on this device, I told people that this was the device we were going to be using. DL was on the truck. I'm not taking it away, but you have to use VL. And what I found was that we had some diehards who always found a reason that they couldn't use the King Vision. There was always some excuse why the King Vision wouldn't work. And I actually looked at the data and said, I understand you think you're better with DL, but I'm looking at the data and you're actually not. So I ask again, very kindly, please use VL, and that didn't happen either. So I decided to quit asking and just remove their opportunity to ignore me. So DL came off the truck with one exception. We have a number 4 Miller there specifically, and it is only to be used for foreign body airway obstructions. And the reason that was there is I wasn't convinced the hyperacute angled blade was really going to help us clear the airway. Since then, I think once you learn how to use it, I think you can. And now I'm debating whether to take it off, just be done with it completely or not. But we have not had anyone use a DL for intubation in the system since 2012, I think, maybe 2013.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you've been doing this for a while, because this is August 2016, and you've been going for about 4 years then. On that approach. Before we get into, because I do want to ask you about, it sounds like you had a heck of a project or process about getting King Vision, because you had looked at GlideScope's equivalent and a few others.
Sure.
One thing I wanted to point out for, you know, a few listeners who may not really understand when it comes to DL and VL what some of the issues are. So VL has a what's called a standard geometry blade. I think the only reason we call it that is because we used it forever, so it gets to be the standard. But you know, there's Mac and there's Miller. Mac has a curve. Miller is straight traditionally. When you intubate with those, the idea is you should directly see epiglottis, your cords, you know, basically your airways directly seen. You're not having to use a video support. There are VL equivalents. There's the CMAC. The traditional CMAC blade has that curve, so it allows you to do direct and video laryngoscopy. That, of course, is not as common as what you just mentioned, the GlideScope. And the GlideScope is the one that I think most of us, I don't know if it's just because of the market, how the reps get out there, how we get out there and see stuff cost-wise. I'm not quite sure what made it so special, but GlideScope is the one I feel like we use a lot of. It's the one I use the most. I originally trained because of the EMS background and just the places where I trained at initially. You know, DL is, I feel like, the standard and is what I did most of my early intubations with. And I was okay with it, but I was not at the same level as VL. And as you mentioned, you know, not everyone's doing this every day. I feel like if you're someone who's doing this constantly or even just staying up to date with your training constantly on this, you can probably pull off DL better than you could VL. But for someone who's not doing this every day or someone who's not used to their stressors, like you said, you kind of go back to what you're experienced with. And the evidence is always, I feel like, a little mixed. And we've kind of talked about that before. I know Min's talked about it before about how good VL or DL is. But it seems like, especially with your novice or less experienced people, that VL is quick to pick up, especially with these younger learners, because I'll admit I play video games. And so that perception of being used to looking at a screen that is not directly connected to your reality of what you're seeing with your eyes is a huge difference for me. And I feel like with VL, I'm very confident and comfortable about, okay, even with that two-handed approach with the King Vision, which is interesting because it's all one hand and how you use it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that hyper-angulated blade with the GlideScope is very different. And there's been at least two cases I've had so far where I really feel like that hyperangulated blade, because I didn't have to use standard geometry, really saved me, where I'm not sure DL could have pulled it off. So I'm a big proponent for it in that sense. There are certain situations where DL is not going to be perfect, even if you were in the right setting. Then again, VL, like you said, there's a couple of scenarios where we're not sure how well it's going to work with like foreign bodies and stuff like that.
Right.
As a quick aside to that, has anyone in your department or system had to use it with foreign bodies yet? Okay.
We have. So we have done, we implemented this, let's see, in 2012. Well, I'm taking a look back at our paper, September 30th of 2012. We put it out on all of our trucks. Since then, we've had probably four or five foreign body airway obstructions. It turns out we just don't see that much of it. The first two, it was hit or miss. The first one, VL worked fine. We were able to get it out. The second one, the medic told me he wasn't able to see anything and had to default back to DL. And we've had, I think, two more since then that the VL worked fine on. I think the issue is understanding when to look directly in the oropharynx versus when to look in the screen. And if you, and we teach this now, and I think most people who really understand how VL works teach this approach, as you initially insert the blade, you're looking directly into the oropharynx, making sure that you have the tongue out of the way, the blade's going underneath the tongue. And then as you're going around, you move your eyes from directly into the back of the oropharynx up to the camera in time to see the uvula and then move around. So what we found with the foreign bodies is if you just shove the King in or the King Vision in and use it essentially as a lighted tongue depressor, if you will, and you're still looking directly into the oropharynx, you can find most foreign bodies, if they're especially the ones that aren't very deep. If they're deeper than that, then you can look directly on the camera and see it and grab it with the McGills. Again, I'm not 100% confident that there's not going to be situations that pop up where that won't work, so I haven't completely committed to pulling that Miller blade off just for that, but we haven't seemed to really need it in quite a while. But unfortunately, that the foreign body is such a low occurrence issue, it's really hard for me to get enough occurrences to feel comfortable saying that, yeah, we can do it. As opposed to intubation, which, you know, we get enough intubations that I can feel comfortable with the data.
Yeah, basically one of those high-risk, low-frequency events, and you don't really have time to plan for it otherwise, so you kind of stuck where you're at. I can see where that's a problem and why – like you said, you have a DL backup just more or less for that kind of situation.
Yeah, and that's really where we are. We do train for it. I mean, we teach them now how to do it with the King Vision. So we try to prepare for it. It's just we don't have enough iterations of doing it in the wild, if you will, to tell if it actually works. It seems to. So I feel pretty comfortable with it. I haven't had an occurrence to do that myself. My intubations, there's goop down there, but it's suctionable goop as opposed to McGillable goop. I'm not sure. I think I probably just made that up. But
I like it.
I can suction goop. My way out of. I can suction my way out of things.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you, you mentioned in your background on VL there something I think is incredibly important, and that is with DL, there are really two types of DL. There's the Miller and the Mac. But for the most part, you use them the same. Granted, the tip goes in different places, but the mechanism is really the same. You're going in and you're displacing the mandible and the tongue, and you're lifting it down and up. And that is the same mechanism as the standard geometry blades, like you mentioned, the C-Mac and the McGrath are the ones that I'm most familiar with. The typical, C-Mac D, but the regular C-Mac.
Right.
You're using the same mechanism, and a lot of people will say, well, hey, the pro of this is you can use it exactly like you can a DL, and that's true. You can, and you have a little camera on it. But you pointed out the hyperacute angle, what I call the non-displacing technology. That hyperacute blade is designed not to lift those structures out of the way, but just to walk, peek around the curve is the way a lot of people have talked about that. So you don't have to lift up. And as a matter of fact, if you do try to lift up, you're going to get, well, you'll probably get a decent view, but you'll have difficulty getting the tube to go through the cords, as opposed to if you're just using it like it's intended, looking around the corner, you'll be able to see the cords and you'll be able to get a pretty good, get the tube to go through. So I think that's an incredibly important point that not all VLs are the same. The hyperacute, I think, brings some very specific advantages that I really like. I'm a huge fan of a channeled blade and a hyperacute blade. And I can feel all the way from Texas to Australia. I can feel men twitching even as I say this. But I'm a big fan of that combination.
All right, and that wraps up podcast number 10. Don't forget to come back next week for the second half of our conversation with Dr. Jeff Jarvis. We're also going to have more airway stuff coming up here soon, so keep paying attention. And always give us your feedback. We are definitely interested in what you have to say. We have the comments from directly on our post site. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook. Just see the show notes for more details on that and some of the other parts of our conversation. And again, we thank you for coming to the show, and we ask that you continue to provide total care everywhere.